No, not yet.
Yeah. Right. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Ram. Tonight it is, what is it, April 12th? April 12th, 2011, in the town of Alachua, Florida, it is the appearance day of Lord Ram. We should be talking about Lord Ram, but last week I promised we'd be talking about sadhana bhakti. Tonight, my monitor is not working, so I can't see who's here. And I can't even see your questions, but Uddhava is in the back, so if you have any questions, he's going to relate them to me. So welcome to all of you who are here, who I can neither even know. Who's here? We wanted you to tell me, and then I'll know.
Satyam.
Satyam. So chum.
Balavi.
Balavi. Hello, Balavi.
Edgar.
Haven't seen you in a few hours.
Edgar.
And more are on the way. Of course, everyone is, if you're at the temple, you're celebrating Lord Ram's appearance. So we're going to talk about sadhana. Who knows what the word sadhana means? Anyone have an idea? Sadhana. Sadhana means, it's like, sadhana is like learning something. Particularly, it also refers in the Krishna conscious perspective to learning something or doing something which you may not be spontaneously attracted to doing. You may not feel like doing it. So sadhana in Sanskrit means practice. And the idea of practice is you do something over and over and over. And there are many benefits of doing something over and over, and one of the benefits is you develop more of a spontaneous attraction for doing that, a natural desire to do it. Something like when you're learning an instrument, it may be difficult, may be painful, but once you learn how to play it, then it becomes spontaneous. You want to play it. You enjoy playing it. So if we liken this to a practice of sadhana, something we may be asked to do by our spiritual master may not be so enjoyable. We may not even want to do it. But because he has asked us to do it, because the Shastra has advised us to do it, we do it. And as we become purified, what happens? We develop a natural attraction, just like when we chant Hare Krishna. Sometimes it's time to chant in the morning and we don't feel like it, but we do it anyway. But as we advance, then naturally we want to chant. I remember telling you a story about a GBC sannyasi guru who admitted to the whole world that he could not chant 16 rounds. But actually it was good news, because what he said is, I can't stop at 16. I have to chant 32. So that's what happens through practice. Now, from sadhana we come to sadhya. Sadhya means the goal. By doing the practice, you get the result, or you come to the goal. Generally, the practice and the goal are not the same, are not always the same. You practice one thing to get to a different position. In Krishna consciousness, what we practice is also the goal. But the difference is what motivates the practice. So I'm going to be chanting Hare Krishna in the stage of practice. I am going to be chanting Hare Krishna in the stage of sadhya, perfection. The difference is only what is motivating me to chant. I'm motivated by the rules, the regulations. When we are initiated, Srila Prabhupada demands of us, or your guru demands of you, to chant 16 rounds minimum. But when you have an attraction for chanting, no one has to demand that of you, because naturally you'll do that and you'll chant more than that. Because you're chanting because you want to, because you have an attraction for it. So that's the perfectional stage. So the practice continues in the perfectional stage. It's just the motivation has changed. Now, in the stage of sadhana, the stage of practice, the motivation to do it is because we know it is the right thing to do, because we know it will purify us. We also do it because our spiritual master asks us to do it. So recently, Pallavi, who was with us tonight, was asking me about sleeping. And I wrote her a letter about how we can control our sleeping. Not control it, well, I would say reduce it. Control it and reduce it, yes. Particularly how we can rise early in the morning, because that's such a good time to do sadhana, such a good time to read and chant and all these good things. And so I was contemplating, well, we hear, or if you haven't heard, you're going to hear now, that we should rise early. Prabhupada many, many times says, from 4 in the morning till 10 at night, we are serving Krishna. So where did he get this? Was that arbitrary, 4 in the morning till 10 at night? Well, deity worship goes on from 4 in the morning till 10 at night. So that's why Prabhupada says, from 4 in the morning till 10 at night, we're serving Krishna. And anyone who lives in the temple, Prabhupada said, must rise by 4. That's the practice. And in India, just like Pallavi is from Jaipur, in Jaipur, if you go to the Radha Govinda temple at 5 o'clock, Pallavi, how many people are there at Mangalarti? Do you have any idea? 300, 400, 500? The last time I was there was maybe 15 years ago, and I just I remember people streaming in at Mangalarti, 5 o'clock. So it was normal for them. They were practiced to rise early. It's a godly time. So it's a good time to be up. People who practice spiritual life, who traditionally have practiced it, or come from cultures that have practiced it, will rise early. Late at night is not as good as early in the morning. So they go to bed early and they rise early. So I was thinking, so we may know that we should rise early. You may have already heard from Srila Prabhupada that you should rise early, at least an hour and a half before the sun rises, which is called Brahma Muhurta. So you may have heard that, but you may not have been able to do it, or you may be struggling with it. So I was questioning, why, if we know we should do something, will we struggle with it, and how can we become more self-disciplined or more determined? So I think there are several ways this happens. It's not just one way. For some devotees, the motivation to do anything that they don't want to do is simply because their spiritual master asked them to do it. And they want to please their spiritual master. And that's the main motivation. You may say, well, aren't they doing it to help themselves? That may be there. Aren't they doing it because they know it's the right thing? Aren't they doing it because they're intelligent? Aren't they doing it because they know if they don't do it, they'll suffer? That may be there to some degree. But their prime motivation is to please their spiritual master. There's a relationship there. And they want to please their spiritual master by following the spiritual master's instruction. So maybe they don't want to go to bed earlier. Maybe they find it's difficult to go to bed earlier. They don't want to get up early in the morning. But they do it because their spiritual master asked them. So that's one reason. That's a very strong reason. And many, many shows back, I don't know if you were remembering, but many, many shows back, maybe a year ago, I was talking about the principle of Siksha Guru. And Siksha Guru is something which is not so much discussed in ISKCON, or maybe not so well known. But the idea of Siksha Guru is that you don't necessarily need to take guidance. You don't necessarily, some people are not ready for initiation, but it doesn't mean if you're not ready for initiation or you don't even think you'll be ready in this life, you don't need guidance from somebody. So you take guidance from a senior devotee, someone you have faith in. It's called the Siksha Guru. Or you may be initiated, but you need more guidance than your Diksha Guru is able to give you. And so you take guidance from another person. So I was recommending, or I was realizing, that a lot of devotees need this guidance, but they don't take it for one reason or another. Or maybe they don't think it's proper to approach somebody, or they're not going to be initiated soon, and they haven't chosen their guru, so they just don't think they should take guidance from someone if they haven't chosen them to be their guru. Or they already have a guru and they're getting some instruction and they don't realize they would do better if they took shelter of someone else or got some guidance. Maybe not take shelter in that sense, but got some guidance. So when there's a relationship like that where you're hearing from someone and that person is helping you, the desire to please that person becomes a very strong motivator in your life, and it enables you to do things that ordinarily you wouldn't, that would either be difficult or you wouldn't be able to do them because you want to please that person. So that's the Vedic paradigm of teacher-student. The idea is always to please the the teacher. And that's there in the Bhagavatam. If you please the guru, then naturally Krishna is pleased and you get an attraction for hearing about Krishna just by pleasing the guru. And you start to take on the qualities of that person. So it's not just there's one person who's Diksha Guru and that's it, but there may be many people who can be Siksha Gurus for you, temporarily or permanently. So that's a motivation for many. For some, that's the only motivation that they need. It's just my spiritual master has asked me. So just like in our temples, we sing this song, Sri Guru Charana Padma, it's Bengali, Kevala Bhakati Sadma. It's a glorification of the spiritual master by Narottam Das Thakur. And one of the lines, he says, Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya Chitete Kariya Aikya. So Guru Mukha means, Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya means the words coming from the lotus mouth of my Guru. Chitete, my consciousness, Kariya Aikya, I want to make my consciousness one with the words of my Guru. In other words, I want to make those words my life and soul. That's my desire, that his words become my actions. That's the idea. So when we're in that consciousness, that the words of the Guru become my action, and my action becomes non-different. My action is aligned with the instructions of my Guru, because I want to please him by following him. That becomes my motivation. That's a very, very powerful motivation. We look at the early days of the movement, so much sacrifice was made to spread Krishna consciousness. We had very little facility, very few temples, very little money. It was very austere, but the motivation was we wanted to please Prabhupada. We wanted Prabhupada to be happy. We wanted to see him smile. So that motivation enabled us to detach ourselves from anything that would get in the way from pleasing Prabhupada. And that's what pushed us. So that's really, really an important principle in Krishna consciousness, is pleasing the superior authorities. And this is a tradition within Vedic culture. There's so much respect given to authorities, satisfying the superiors, whether it be the parents or the teacher, the guru, the priest, the older brother, the older sister. That's the culture. And that becomes a strong motivator to do things that we wouldn't even want to do. Now, in the Western culture, sometimes we look at the idea of arranged marriage, we don't understand it. To us, it's strange. How can people do this? But if you're raised in a culture where you respect the elders and their guidance, then it's natural. Yes, the elders will guide me, and I'll do what they say because they have my interests in mind, and I want to please them. I want to make them happy. And so by marrying a certain man or woman, knowing that the elders are pleased, often you can weather the storms and make all the transitions you need and make sacrifices and so forth because you're doing it for a higher purpose. So that's a motivating factor if you would like to rise earlier, for example. Or not just rising earlier, we're using that as one example, but let's use any example. If you would like to regularly chant or chant more or chant better, or you would like to study Prabhupada's books more regularly, or you would like to do some deity worship at home, some form of deity worship, if you like to get more association of devotees, or you would like to make your home like a temple, more temple-like, then doing that in connection with pleasing Guru can become a strong impetus. The reason I presented these five activities is because this is called Panchanga Bhakti, and there are 64 items of devotional service, but Shastra says, I believe it was Lord Chaitanya also said, that of the 64, these five are the most important. That's kirtan, chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, sarusanga, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, worshipping Tulsi, and living in a holy place. So if you don't live in a temple, or you don't live in Vrindavan, or Mayapur, or Jagannath Puri, or some holy place, what it means to live in a holy place is you make your home like a temple. You make your home the holy place. So your home is clean, it's not messy, there are Krishna conscious activities. If you want to make your home a holy place, then blaring some mundane show is not what goes on in a holy place. Is it? I don't think so. Sinful activities don't go on in a holy place. You know, you just get the idea if you want to make your home a temple. And worshipping the deities, that's a regulated activity done every day, ideally at the same time. What if you're not qualified? You have pictures. You offer incense. You offer your food. You offer flour. You do some kind of puja. You offer prayers. You know, one of the main aspects of puja is kirtan and prayer and mantra. So you can chant many mantras, even to a picture of the deity. You can even put the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on your altar and worship that. You can even put Srimad Bhagavatam on your altar and worship that. They're all non-different from Krishna. But sadhu sangha, we need to get the association of devotees. This is a practice of sadhana, one of the main practices. Without sadhu sangha, we are finished. So if we don't live near a temple, we have to somehow or other go to a temple when we can. Go to festivals like the Festival of Inspiration, Mother's Day weekend, or like the sadhana retreat. We're having a sadhana retreat here in 2 weeks where devotees are going to come together Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday and just stay together and do Krishna conscious activities. And we created the sadhana retreat primarily so we can get association with one another, because we don't always get it. Some of you don't live near a temple. Some of you live near a temple, but you're so busy you have little time to go there. So sadhana retreat means you stop. Stop everything. Don't do anything. Turn your cell phone off. Turn your computer off. Just go to the sadhana retreat and hear and chant in the association of devotees. So we created the sadhana retreat for that purpose, to give association. It's so important. We can't maintain our Krishna consciousness without association. It's our inspiration. Not only is it our inspiration, it gives us guidance by discussing with devotees. We open our minds and hearts to them. They open their minds and hearts to us. We discuss our challenges. We discuss our ecstasies. We discuss our appreciation for Krishna consciousness. We discuss our problems. Sadhu Sangha is, it's everything. Prabhupada writes in the... I'm not sure, maybe Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, that devotional service cannot be perfect, cannot be successful, cannot be relishable without the association of devotees. So, there's kirtan, there's hearing Bhagavatam, hearing Prabhupada's books, essential activity to purify our consciousness. There's association, living in a holy place and worshiping the deity. So, when you put all of these together, they become very powerful. Very powerful. Synergistic effect of all five of these activities. This is sadhana bhakti. This is what sadhana is. It's these five activities. But I want to tell you something that I read about sangha, which is very powerful, because it also addresses this question. The question originally we were addressing is why we know we should do something, some activity in sadhana, but we slack off, or we don't even start it, or we start it and we don't maintain it. Or we don't do it as well as we could, or do it as well as we know we should be doing it. So some disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta approached him and said that we are not following our vows, our initiation vows. We are falling, sometimes falling down. What can we do, or why is this? And he said two things. He said, your intelligence is weak, and your heart is weak. And the solution to solve this problem is to get the association of devotees. So I thought this was very interesting, because if you're looking at a problem you have or a challenge or something which you want to do but you just can't get grips on it, you just can't discipline yourself enough. And as we said, well, pleasing the guru is a strong impetus. But here, because we're talking about synergy, okay, here's another aspect of it. It's not that one is mutually, they're mutually exclusive. You can do all these. So here Bhaktisiddhanta says, get the association of devotees, because we become influenced by our association. We become who we associate with. And there's some saying to the effect that if you know a man's company, then even if you don't know the man, you'll know what the man is like. And I don't know if you're aware of the fact that, I don't know the actual circumstance or the context of this, but children are either separated accidentally or purposely or abandoned in some way by their parents in a forest or a jungle. And these children were raised by, I think, gorillas or apes. And so the anthropologists document that these children become culturally adapted to ape life. I think that's where the story of, or the personality of Tarzan comes in. Tarzan was like an ape because he grew up in the jungle. He was a human. Is that correct? Tarzan? Ape or gorilla? Or one or the other? Yeah, something like that. but he was raised by them. And in the documentation that I've read about these events, that they have to reprogram or deprogram these humans who are like animals because they can't relate to humans. It's not their culture. And so it takes years and years and years for them to become human, culturally human and human-human. So if you associate with apes, you're going to become an ape. I don't recommend you do that, but if you happened to end up in a camp of apes, especially if you're raised by them, you're going to become an ape. You're going to think like an ape, you're going to act like an ape, and talk like an ape, and eat like an ape. So if you associate with sadhus, you're going to look like a sadhu, walk like a sadhu, talk like a sadhu, eat like a sadhu, and act like a sadhu. You can't help it, even if you don't want to. The power of association is that it subtly influences you. So therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, okay, you have a tendency to commit sin because you're not intelligent, because your heart is weak, or your intelligence is not pure. Get the association of sadhus. By that association, your heart will change, you'll be purified. So this is one of the greatest, I don't want to say unkept secrets in Krishna consciousness, but for now I'll say that for lack of a better phrase. But what I know, what I like to do myself, is if I experience anything within myself or any area of myself that I know needs improving, and I know another devotee excels in that area, I always like to make it a habit of hanging out with that devotee. Because if that devotee has something that I need, I know by associating with them, I'm going to get it. So let's say I'm in the mode of passion. I'm very, very busy. I always want things. I can't stop doing things. I can't just settle down and hear and chant. No matter how much I have, I always want more. I'm just moving all the time, super active. So I should find someone or think of a friend I have who's very sattvic, who's very peaceful, who is very disciplined, self-controlled, and very intentional in how his life is organized. He doesn't just passionately, impulsively do things, but is very, very organized according to a plan. I should hang out with that person, because by hanging out with them, that's going to rub off on me. I shouldn't hang around with other passionate people. I remember one time devotees who had a business asked Prabhupada, or they said to Prabhupada, said, Srila Prabhupada, you are encouraging all the devotees in book distribution or in college preaching or in deity worship, but you're not encouraging us in business. And Prabhupada said, you don't need encouragement in business. You're already naturally doing that. You need encouragement in sadhana. So that's the idea. We may have a certain nature which is perhaps not ideally suited for a sattvic life. So we don't want, if we hang around with people like that, it's going to reinforce it. So that's why Prabhupada didn't want to reinforce their business tendency, because it was already so strong. He didn't need to reinforce it. You know, of course, this is the idea in business, you know, hang around with other business people and your business will get better and you'll churn the ocean of financial kata. But really, we should see that where we have a problem or where we're lacking, find someone who doesn't have that problem or who's dealt with the problem. Find someone who is full in the thing you're lacking and associate with them. It's one of the best secrets in Krishna consciousness, and we don't always take advantage of it enough. Now, association doesn't always mean you have to be physically present with a person. You can actually associate with somebody by thinking about them, just like you could think about someone who has a good quality. Has a quality that you want that you're not really manifesting in your life. You could think about them. And by thinking about them, that's a kind of association. You could read about them in Shastra or in other books. Read about that person who has a certain quality, just like we teach a course in forgiveness. So we read stories about people who have performed tremendous acts of forgiveness. And by hearing about that, hearing those stories, we become inspired. Yes, I could do that. We develop the desire to do that. So stories are very powerful. You're associating with Narada Muni by hearing about Narada Muni. You're associating with Srila Prabhupada by hearing about him. You're associating with the spiritual master or many spiritual masters by reading their teachings and by hearing their lectures. That's another kind of association. Reading and hearing. Prabhupada, when he left New York in the beginning of the movement, devotees were telling him, we're going to feel separation, we don't know how we can go on without you, and he said, here, put my picture on this seat that I sit, and said, I'll be there. And he also said, put a picture of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and he'll be watching you. So Prabhupada made us aware that the spiritual master is even present in his picture, so we can associate with the spiritual master through his picture. So there are many ways to get the sangha of devotees. I know sometimes I think of my godbrothers who have wonderful qualities, qualities which I cherish, qualities which I would like to manifest to the degree that they have them, and it becomes a great inspiration to think about them, to think about their activities. And it becomes like, you could say, an appetizer to want to develop those qualities. So this is another motivating factor in our spiritual life, which is, I think it's one of the easiest, in a sense, because just like Hiranyakashipu, although he's a great demon, he had some wise words to say, and he said, we're like stone or gem, and whatever we contact, we reflect it, or we're like mirrors, we're just reflecting what's around us. So that's the power of sangha, that's the power of environment. So if we're talking about what we're reflecting, let's talk about living in the holy place. Let's talk about making our holy place a home. We are tremendously affected by our environment. But the interesting thing about this is that although we say, well, I'm affected by my environment, also understand that we create the environment. You say, you know, maybe you're affected by a dirty house. Hello, who created the dirty house? Did dirt just fly in the window and just land on the floor and it got glued down and you couldn't pick it up? Did the drawers open up and your clothes fall out all over your house? I don't think so. And now they're stuck to the floor and you can't get them up. And every time you look at your clothes, they're like sleeping pills that put you to sleep when you think about cleaning up. I don't think that happens. So you see how it works. It's a domino effect. If we're in bad environmental consciousness, then we create a bad environment. And then that bad environment reinforces the bad environmental consciousness. It's a vicious cycle. So we want to create an environment which is conducive to what we want to achieve. Now, here's an important point, everyone. Please listen carefully. You have goals, or you should have goals, in Krishna consciousness. Now we're talking about, okay, here's five goals, five practices. So let's say we're, for the sake of discussion, these are our five goals. To do kirtan. Kirtan means japa also. To do better kirtan, better or more kirtan, more hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam or any shastra, particularly Prabhupada's books, hearing, and get the association of devotees, worship the deity, and live in a holy place. We want to do more of these. So, these are our goals. So, now we want to look at the environment that we live in. We want to see, do my surroundings support these goals? Or do my surroundings undermine these goals? Because sometimes that's what happens, right? So, you have to look at your environment. You have to look at your lifestyle. You have to look at the things around you and ask yourself, does this support my goals, my intentions, what I want to achieve in Krishna consciousness? So, one devotee told me, he's a writer, and he said, every morning before he writes, he cleans his room because the cleanliness of his room affects his consciousness. And if the room is not clean, his consciousness is not clear enough to write properly. Interesting, isn't it? Now, if you become more aware of this, you'll start to see how much a messy room and a dirty room or a messy house and a dirty house affects you. You start looking around. What's out of place? What can I put away? What's dirty? What can I clean my drawers out? What's look at my desk. Look, just you start looking around. Of course, if you have 10 children, forget it. Don't even try until they're like 10 years. Till they're old enough to clean themselves, you're gonna have a hard time. So, but in the normal course of things, then you can control. Think about your house, your environment, what's in it, what you would like not to have in it that may distract you. Like, I mean, simple things. Magazines. We have lots of magazines that come to us. We don't even order them. Or we have other magazines that we order, and they're sitting around our house with pictures of weird-looking people on the covers or half-naked women on the covers. You know, Prabhupada said, you shouldn't read the news magazines, because by doing so, you'll see the faces of the politicians. And by seeing their faces, you'll become polluted. Believe it or not. Because the face is the index of the mind. So who would think like that? And then you have all these Newsweek magazines around with pictures of different politicians on the covers. Who would even think that's affecting my consciousness? It is. You want pictures of Krishna. You want pictures of gurus and sadhus in your house. Right? And if you read these magazines, then just tuck them away somewhere so these people's faces are not around and surrounding you. Now, let's talk about the big, bad one-eyed bandit. Who knows what the one-eyed bandit is? Anybody out there? It's called television. So what does television, what's so special about television? The special thing about television is it brings the entire, I don't say the entire material world, but it brings more of what's going on in the material world into your home than you could ever bring in yourself. So here you are, a nice Hare Krishna devotee, trying to make your home like Vaikuntha, trying to make everything sattvic and peaceful. And then you turn on the TV and you start importing these lower modes of nature into your home, and these horrible sound vibrations, which Prabhupada called the nuisance sound of sense gratification in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. The nuisance sound of sense gratification. Problem is, we don't think it's a nuisance. I mean, maybe we do, and maybe some of us don't, but we should. And this is how the modes of nature work, because Prabhupada said, if you're in the mode of ignorance, then, if you bring the mode of ignorance into your life, it doesn't bother you because you're synced with that mode. Have you ever noticed? Some people are very dirty, and if you're a clean person, you wonder to yourself, how can that person stand to be so dirty? If I was that dirty, I would go insane. Any of you ever thought like that? Yeah, if you're clean. But if you're a dirty person and you see another dirty person, you don't even notice that person is dirty. Because it doesn't bother you. So if you're in the mode of ignorance, things in the mode of ignorance don't bother you. So look around your house. If you find things dirty, if you find things messy, if you find you've left a mess there for the last 6 months, you haven't yet cleaned up, that you've been promising yourself every Saturday morning you're going to clean it up for the last 6 months, just try to understand there might be a little bit of influence of the mode of ignorance affecting you. And by cleaning it up, at least you're coming to passion. At least you're moving, getting things moving there. Yeah, let's get moving, passion, yeah. But really you want to come to goodness so that when you come into your home, you just feel calm. And that's a place you can do your bhajan, you can do your sadhana in that environment. Okay, if you have kids, young kids, talking about calm house. Yes, it's calm after they go to sleep. Other than that, it's not so calm. So take advantage when they're sleeping if you can, so you can become, of course, a lot of you go to sleep when they go to sleep. That's also another problem. So for all of those of you who have small children, don't believe anything I say. You can't apply anything. No. Take whatever you can apply, and whatever you can't apply, don't worry. You'll be able to do it later, because sometimes now it's not possible to apply everything. Just do what you can. Do the best you can. These are general principles. We're trying to understand them, apply them. So we're talking about alignment here. I want to align myself. I want to come to the mode of goodness. from the mode of goodness, I can practice Krishna consciousness. That's where I want to be. So I want to create an environment in my house. That's the mode of goodness. Bring your children to the mode of goodness. Get them regulated. Clean. Sadhana means regulation. So if you want your house to be like a temple, then everyone in the house should be regulated like in a temple, regulated around the deities. Okay, we're going to have kirtan every morning at this time, or every evening at this time, or we're going to read together at this time. So you create some regulation. The more you can make your house like a temple, the more you're living in Vaikuntha. And actually, if it's a temple, you want to keep it clean, keep the altar nicely decorated, incense burning, and so forth. Nice pictures, and... Oh yeah, we were talking about the television. Yeah, the TV and the TV playing shows in the temple that are not Krishna conscious. I've never seen that. Television is not bad. It's what comes out of the television is bad. So, if you're watching something Krishna conscious, yeah, great. Something not Krishna conscious? But Prabhu, I have to be up on the news. Okay, all right. Just do it on the internet where you don't have to bother everybody. Don't do it too long because Prabhu, the news today is the same as it was yesterday, in case you haven't noticed. Some disaster here, some politician caught doing some hoochie-coochie over there, some politician caught stealing some money, some bill one politician's trying to pass, other politicians are trying to tell the world that this guy is crazy, his bill is useless. These things, okay, you know, maybe some things relevant that we need to know for our business or survival, okay. But don't hear, okay, let's talk about hearing Bhagavatam. Hearing Bhagavatam, think. Time I waste reading other literature, which has no relevance to my spiritual life, I could be reading the Bhagavatam. You know, in the last days of your life, you're not going to regret that you didn't read every issue of Newsweek magazine. But you will regret that you didn't read enough of the Shastra. There's no question. It's like, why didn't I read more? Why didn't I learn more? I was such a fool. Something to think about. The value of hearing. Hearing strengthens, purifies the intelligence. Hearing is powerful. Hearing directs our consciousness. In the conditioned state, we can see Krishna through our ears. Prabhupada said that so many times. You don't see Krishna with your eyes. You're not qualified. But you see Krishna with your ears. That's how you understand who Krishna is. In the conditioned state, if you saw Krishna, you wouldn't understand who he was. You wouldn't actually see him. But you see him by hearing from the spiritual master. That's the idea. So Prabhupada stressed hearing. Now, interesting point. For those of us who are impatient, who have been practicing Krishna consciousness, doing the same thing, year after year after year after year, wondering, when am I going to become Krishna conscious? Well, we have been conditioned for many lifetimes. How many lifetimes? 10? No. 20? No. 100? No, I don't think so. 1,000? Probably. 100,000? Maybe. 100 million? Maybe. So we're conditioned to think and act in a certain way, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. So if you found a book that had been soaked in water and dried out, you would find the pages to be all curled up. And if I told you, I need you to straighten the pages out. Just sit there with your hands and straighten them out. And you'd straighten them out and they'd curl back. And you'd straighten them and they'd curl back. And you'd straighten them and they'd curl back. You'd have to be straightening them all the time. Well, that's our conditioning. And that's why we have to regularly do our devotional sadhana every day. It's you know, for millions of lifetimes or years, we've been doing the wrong thing. So now we have to create new samskaras of the right thing. And that's why sadhana is called a practice. Because by our conditioned nature, there's not a taste to perform spiritual practices, or maybe not a great taste, or at least the point is we always don't feel like it. So sadhana is, okay, it's practice. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavatam says, hear every day. Every day, just hear. Keep hearing. And what should I hear? Hear the same thing. Why do we have to hear the same thing? Because we're flattening the paper and it comes up. We've all heard we're not the body about a zillion times. And we still don't realize it. So we have to keep hearing, from different points of view, different angles, sharpen the intelligence. Prabhupada told us the same thing from so many angles, so many times. So that's the idea. That's the process. over and over again, chanting every day, every day. And when am I going to become Krishna conscious? Just keep chanting. Just keep hearing. Keep associating. Keep every day doing this. It's reconditioning us from those lifetimes of conditioning. The water's dropping on the stone thousands of years, and it's indenting the stone. It's washing a hole or a crevice in the stone. That's the idea. We're conditioned. We have to recondition ourselves. So we recondition ourselves to these devotional practices. And then as we do them more and more and more, we start to become conditioned to do them. There's so many devotees who are conditioned to chant 16 rounds. It is not possible for them not to do this. They can't not do it. It just won't happen. They've been doing it so long. This is their practice. They do this every day. They don't even think about it. They don't plan it on a day planner. It just gets done. It's programmed in there. All of you eat every day. Do you write eating? Do you write lunch? The time you're going to eat lunch and what you're going to eat for lunch in your daily planner? Unless you're on a diet, I don't think so. But you do it. It's just you do it. That's all there is to it. So when we develop practices, gradually those practices turn into habits. They turn into ways of life. Habits become your way of life. You know, there's a saying, excellence is just a habit. If you do the right thing over and over, it becomes a habit, and then your excellence is guaranteed by the habit. So that's where we want to come to. We want to come to this point where all these devotional practices become natural habits for us. We just do them. You know, we just pick up the Bhagavatam and read it. We just chant our rounds. It's the way we are. We associate with devotees. Our home is a temple. This is just wherever we go, this is what goes with us. Now, the idea of sadhana is interesting because if you think of it, if you have spiritual life, think about someone, just someone on the street that says, I'm spiritual, I have spiritual life, then naturally you want to know, well, how does your spiritual life manifest? What do you do? And if the person said, well, I go to church on Sunday, then you probably think, I don't really know that this person has spiritual life because what do they do during the week? So at least for us, we have a practice, spiritual practice. If you have a spiritual life, there should be a spiritual practice to go with it. Otherwise, how is it that you have spiritual life? Bhakti is active. Spiritual life is active. You have to do something because you're going to do something anyway. So Krishna conscious sadhana bhakti is so nice because you create a practice, whatever that practice is. You determine what you can do according to your schedule, according to your ability to do. I will read so much, I will chant so much, I will do puja so much, I will do these things, I will associate so much with devotees per month, and so on. So you decide, that becomes your practice. And now you have a spiritual practice. And that spiritual practice brings you gradually closer and closer to Krishna. So you're doing something every day that's bringing you closer to Krishna, rather than kind of just leaving it up to chance that I'll try to be a spiritual person, I'll try to have the right thoughts, I'll try to be compassionate, I'll try to be respectful. What happens if for a week you're not compassionate, you're not respectful? What if you don't have the right thoughts? You've lost out on weeks of spiritual practice. This is action. The definition of bhakti is engaging the senses in the service of Krishna. Active engagement of the senses. So that's the idea. Because we're going to engage the senses anyway. So sadhana, it's a practice, it's regulated, it's important. A lot of devotees don't have regulation. They're spontaneous, but they're not spontaneously attracted to Krishna. They're just spontaneous. And that is not good. Because if we're spontaneous, then we may not regularly do these panchanga bhaktis. And these panchanga bhaktis are the most important things for our devotional service. So sadhana means, okay, here's the most important things. I guess I should do these things, at least some of them. Of course, the Shastra says even one of them you can do and perfect your life. But it, as I was saying, it has a synergistic effect, so do more. So here are the panchangas. So sadhana means regulate your life in such a way that you can make time to do these every day, 365 days a year. That's sadhana bhakti. That's what's required to become Krishna conscious. Whatever the practice is, maintain it day after day after day. Don't be spontaneous. One day I chant one round, one day 16, one day I do kirtan for 6 hours, the next week I don't do any kirtan, One day I get up for Mangal Artik, one day I get up at 10 o'clock. That's not sadhana. Sadhana is to find some balance which you can maintain. Is it difficult for people? I think for all of us, disciplining our time is always a challenge. And so self-control really manifests itself in controlling time, because you have to make the space to do these practices. So that means you have to move other things out of your life that you would feel like doing at that time, and you don't do them, and you focus on sadhana. So sadhana is a challenge when we're living outside a temple, because there's so many other things going around. So that's the challenge. Control it all. Control your time. This time every day, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to regulate this. Becomes my practice. Now another nice practice, which is not in the five panchangas that Prabhupada recommended, was writing. He said every day you should write. Now I know a lot of devotees don't do this, but Prabhupada said write whatever realization you have, write it. Write it down. Very important, because by writing, your realizations go deeper and they become more clear. And also, by writing, you will get realizations that you didn't have when you began writing. And it will also help you understand what you understand. It will also help you understand what you don't understand. Because when you have to write about it, if you can't express it clearly, you'll realize, I don't understand this point. And then you'll go back to the Prabhupada's books, or you'll write or contact some senior devotee and say, what does this mean? I don't understand it. Clarify it. So writing is powerful. Very powerful. Write every day, Prabhupada said, a few words. Your realization, whatever it is, a few lines. So let's say you want to write. You set a time. This is part of your... Any devotional practice outside of these five can become part of your sadhana practice. So every day I want to learn a verse. So I set aside a time. It's my time for learning verses. Every day I want to write. Every day I want to... What else? What else can we do? Offer prayers. Prayers is a process of bhakti. You know, whatever it may be. So, or just, I'm going to read Krishna book. I'm going to read the whole, this month I want to read every night the Krishna book. Something like that. So that's the idea. So now I'm going to look and see if you have any comments or questions. Are there comments or questions? Let's see. We're on, are there? So Pallavi is saying, sometimes we can not but help some associations. Can't avoid them. Yes. There is a fear that we might get influenced by them. Yes. Maybe a nosy neighbor who wouldn't leave you alone. Yes. So, I'll answer that question. And is there an audio book of Bhagavatam? Yes, there is. Can they get it? Can she get it at Krishna.com? Amala Bhakta Bhagavatam? No?
I didn't find it.
Amala Bhakta, I think it just came out with a Bhagavatam, no? Dravida? Look on Krishna.com and see. It exists. Maybe not the purports, but the verses. Maybe not the whole Bhagavatam. Okay. So, very good point. One of the principles of bhakti, sadhu sangha, is to associate with the sadhu, or satsanga, to associate with the devotees. And within that principle is the principle to avoid the association of non-devotees. So, generally, when we talk about association, the word association, sangha, it has the, I don't say the connotation, it's not a connotation, but the meaning, when Shastra uses the word sangha, it refers to more of a relationship, ongoing relationship, cultivation, friendship with another person. So as we were saying, when you share a relationship with another person, you're influenced by them, and you begin to take on their mannerisms, their attitudes, their language, unknowingly. So the idea of association with persons who are not Krishna conscious is that we should not have regular and intimate association, because we'll be influenced by them. We'll even be influenced by their thoughts, because their thoughts, people's thoughts affect us. So generally the idea is when we associate with non-devotees, it's either because we have to for business, or we are trying our best to uplift them through our association, trying to give them Krishna consciousness in any way we can. So associating with people who aren't Krishna conscious for the purpose of giving them Krishna consciousness is very uplifting, because you want to be a good example. and you want to be able to express the teachings of Krishna consciousness well. And by expressing them yourself, they become more clear and vital in your own life. And you become more inclined to practice what you're teaching others. So maybe your nosy neighbor can now become so nosy about you that you can tell her everything about Krishna, everything you're realizing about Krishna, since she's so nosy and wants to know everything about you. And you create that kind of relationship. And I guess if she's not interested in Krishna, she won't be so nosy. And if she is, maybe she'll become a devotee. So, you know, you can see, are there opportunities in associating with other people to bring up something spiritual to kind of alter the way the consciousness or the conversation is going? Then what to do about associations where you can't avoid, or where they're... have to be in that particular situation, then all we can do is to try to avoid those as far as possible. And when we're in them, it won't be so bad. The more Krishna conscious we are in our homes and we go out in the world, we are very fixed in our own consciousness, and the short associations we have with other people will not be so effective, will not affect us so much. Now, someone may say, yeah, that works, but if you go to work and you're in this association daily, then it can affect you, and that's true, it can. And I would say, the more people know what you believe and who you are, the more they'll relate to you that way. And they'll, you know, when they're talking about getting a beer and this and that, they're not even going to think of you because they know you're not going to do that. You might even come down to a cup of coffee. They know you're not going to drink coffee. So they you kind of train them how to deal with you, so they'll deal with you more like a devotee. So the more you act like a devotee, perhaps even dress like one, the more you show that you're a devotee, people will start to deal with you that way. And when you can't manifest it externally, then you always have to remember, I'm a devotee. And you can look at the activities of non-devotees and just think, I'm so happy that I don't do these things. And these things are really... the way they're trying to be happy is futile. And see that. And just see how they're misusing their human life, wasting their energy in endless pursuit of happiness for which they will never find. So you could be thinking that way, and, you know, in associate, in a philosophical way, looking at people working very, very hard, doing something they don't want to do. That's draining them in order that they can get enough money to buy things that won't make them happy. And you can just look at that and say, I feel so sorry for you that you're in this consciousness. So we can think that way in the association of non-devotees. We can think how they are fruitlessly engaged in material activities. We can feel compassion. Of course, we understand why they're doing that. They're just trying to be happy. So we can see things in different ways, that even though we're in that association, we can still maintain our Krishna consciousness by maintaining a Krishna conscious perspective on what's going on around us. Okay, time is 9:05. We started 5 minutes late, so probably we're going to stop soon. Let's see what else we have here. We have an address. What? To find the digital media newsletter in which we can find, if we have the Bhagavatam,
get updates when the BBT releases the new audiobooks.
Oh, yeah. When BBT releases new audiobooks, you'll get updates. Very good. Edgar says, Prabhupada breaks devotees down into 3 groups. It shows that in the neophyte stage, we need to be careful with our association. But in advanced stages, the devotee sees no difference. Yes. In advanced stages, the devotee sees everyone as a devotee. He sees that there is someone who's not a devotee, and that's himself. But everyone else is a devotee. He sees everything as Krishna. Everything is happening to Krishna by Krishna's desire. Somehow or other, he sees only devotees. So we are advised to distinguish between advanced devotees, middle devotees, lower devotees, and non-devotees. So we know how to associate. And intimate association with non-devotees, it can be a problem. Then you'll say, well, what if my family members are not devotees? So then you have to deal appropriately, and you have to... you should let them know how you expect them to deal with you. So you can, again, create that Krishna-conscious environment. The whole idea is you want to create a Krishna-conscious environment wherever you are. so that the environment doesn't pull you down, and you don't have to spend all your energy fighting against the environment just to stand and just to stand up, but to speak of move forward. Okay, we have another. Edgar says, are there any devotees who are born as such as Maharaj Prakrit? Are there any devotees? Well, in India, you will find very advanced devotees. And you will also find, by Prabhupada's grace, that many of his disciples were really born to be devotees, but Prabhupada wasn't here, so they couldn't become devotees until they met him. And when they met him, they just became devotees and took to Krishna consciousness like a fish takes to water. But also you'll find in India many, many young boys who, at a very early age, will just renounce and leave home in search of a guru. So Maharaj Parikshit, that's special. Srila Prabhupada, that's special. But still, even if we're not born special, we have to, or we can, become special by the special process of bhakti and by the special grace of Srila Prabhupada, Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya. So anything is possible. Okay, I want to thank everybody. It's time to end tonight. We will see you next Tuesday, and we will continue our discussion. And before I go, I just want to remind you, www.bhaktilife.org. If you go to bhaktilife.org, you can learn about the sadhana retreat, April 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, here in the warm weather of Florida, 1 hour from the Alachua Temple. If you've never been to the Alachua Temple, you must come here. And if you don't come here, your life is not complete. To associate with all the wonderful devotees here in Alachua, to take part in all the wonderful activities that go on here. April 22nd, 23rd, 24th, go to bhaktilife.com, read about the sadhana retreat, get all the information you need to know, or you can contact me, mahat@aol.com. And we'd love to see you there. We've got 2 weeks before it's going to happen, so please sign up, please join us. I'd love to see you all. We can all come together and spend a whole weekend together, all of us together. From Friday night, we're going to get up in the morning early together. And I was going to tell you we're going to take a cold shower, but the water isn't cold here anymore. When we were brahmacharis, we'd get up in the morning at 4 or 3 or 2, and we'd take a cold shower. We weren't supposed to turn the hot water on. So depending on the season and where you live, it was colder. But here, even if you want to take a cold shower, it's not that cold. But in any case, we're going to get up early, we're going to have Mangal Arati together, we're going to chant Japa together, we're going to have Bhagavatam class together, we're going to eat breakfast together, we're going to have workshops together. There's even going to be a special program going on there. I don't want to tell you what it is, a special little thing going on there. Special. You'll have to come there to find out. And then we're going to take prasadam, your favorite activity, and then in the afternoon we're going to have more workshops. And a lot of these workshops are all going to be discussions, just talking about bhakti and sharing our realizations, hearing from senior devotees. And then in the evening, Bhadahari is going to lead us in kirtan. And Bhadahari is going to do a special presentation on kirtan and japa, the difference between both. So you're going to get to hear that. And the next day, we're going to have more classes and workshops and chanting japa in the morning together and the morning program together. And then we're going to celebrate and share. And we're going to do really special things on Sunday. And by Sunday at 3 o'clock, you won't want to leave those devotees. You're going to want to take them all home with you because you're going to relish so much the association, the intimate association of hearing and chanting with devotees. So don't miss this opportunity. It's your big opportunity. It's the first time we've ever done this. We want you to come. Going to inspire you so much in your Krishna consciousness. Thank you. Go to bhaktilife.com, check it out. Any questions, email me. Hare Krishna. Jai Jai Hari Bo.
You just said bhaktilife.com at the end.